The opening of Bruckner's Symphony No. 9 in D minor, a favourite piece of my guest and fellow prommer, Marcus de Sautoy, played there by the Concertgebouw Orchestra of Amsterdam, conducted by Bernhard Haitink. And he will conduct that piece on Thursday with the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra, that's in Prom 73. Now though, let's cross the Atlantic to hear from members of another visiting orchestra heading for the Royal Albert Hall this year, the St. Louis Symphony.
I'm Celeste Golden-Boyer, and I play the violin in the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra.
My name is Thomas Jostlein. I'm the associate principal horn player.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra was founded in 1880, so it's the second oldest symphony orchestra in the United States. We play in the Powell Symphony Hall here in St. Louis, which was originally a vaudeville or a movie theater, recreated to be one of the world-class halls that we have here in our country. The other really special thing about our orchestra is the kind of family relationship we have with one another. It's just a band of really kind, wonderful people, and we like each other, we enjoy spending time together, and we certainly enjoy getting to make music with one another.
This is my sixth orchestra I've been a member of. I've played everywhere from Hawaii to the New York Philharmonic. It's a very friendly orchestra, and there's a sense of expression that's encouraged here that I've not found everywhere else. There's a sense of encouragement of really saying something musically when you play. St. Louis is a city of history. We have Scott Joplin, the ragtime composer, was born here. Mark Twain lived here and was born very close by in Hannibal, Missouri. There's some beautiful old buildings here, but also a real patchwork of ethnic neighborhoods, the Italian section, the Polish section. There's this enormous old brewery downtown. The Budweiser Brewery is here in St. Louis as well, so it's a city of beer.
It has kind of a small town feel. It's kind of a foodie town. We have lots of really good restaurants, lots of independent owners, not lots of chains. There's lots of culture in this town. There's theaters. We have incredible opera during the summer and art museums and beautiful parks, and it's a beautiful place to live.
And you can hear the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra playing at the Proms next Tuesday evening under their music director, David Robertson, with a programme of Brahms, Schoenberg, Gershwin and Beethoven's Violin Concerto with Christian Tetzlaff. Well, welcome back to the Royal Albert Hall. And as I said earlier, the audience here absolutely crammed in tonight awaiting the rest of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra's prom. Don't forget that you can tweet as well and sample a selection of favourite moments from the last 7 days of prom's concerts that prommers here have been tweeting about. Visit the Radio 3 homepage and click on your prom's highlights. And if you'd like to tweet your favourite prom moment along with the prom number, just, for example, go to hashtag prom26 or add a post to the BBC prom's Facebook page. Well, applause now for the players of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra as they start to make their way back on stage, making ready for the second half of tonight's prom, live here on BBC Radio 3 and online in high-definition sound. Ricardo Chailly will be rejoining them for a performance of Mahler's Symphony No. 6. And as I mentioned earlier, very considerably bigger ensemble for this piece than from the Messiaen that we heard in the first half of the concert. Well, the symphony was written over the course of a year or so in 1903 and 1904, a relatively happy period in the composer's life. He and his wife Alma were expecting their second child, and his work as director of the Vienna Court Opera was attracting critical approval, although with a certain amount of behind-the-scenes tension, perhaps an inevitable side effect of his determination to introduce new repertoire. It was against that background that Mahler sat down to start work on his new symphony, and ended up writing what's arguably his darkest and most somber music. Not for nothing did he nickname it the Tragic Symphony, although that title had disappeared by the time the premiere took place. It scored, as I said, for large orchestra with plentiful on- and offstage percussion, including two instruments appearing for the first time in Mahler's music, a celesta and a hammer, which plays an important role. More about that later. Now, there's been much debate ever since the work's premiere about the order of its two middle movements. Mahler changed his mind about it more than once, and so has Riccardo Chailly.
Well, we know that Mahler tried scherzo first and Dante second, but then changed mind. And I've been also doing the same thing in my experience with this piece, which I always felt somehow unsatisfied. And I discovered that separating thoroughly first movement to the scherzo, placing the andante in the middle, you force the shape of the construction of the scherzo to be much more distant from the character of the sort of imposing march of the first movement. That gave me an idea completely different from the time when I recorded, because when I recorded I was extremely young in Amsterdam in the early 80s, to choose a complete different set of tempo in the scherzo. Normally you hear the first movement in one tempo and the scherzo start exactly the same metronome, although there is no metronome indication in the score. And I decided that this would not please me enough to make more of a diabolic dance with death, as it is, with a beautiful trio in the middle, a little bit old-fashioned style. But the general driving character of the scherzo for me has to have a much higher degree of speed compared to the first movement. And this idea came because of the separation with the andante in the middle, which is one of the greatest song without words, which was a typical example of an endless melody, a melody without an end, which Mahler would make in his own way a sort of prolongation in the slow movement of the sixth.
Riccardo Chailly and the members of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra settling down, finished their tuning with concertmaster Julius Bekesch, and the hammer that I mentioned a moment ago at the back of the stage, we're going to be hearing that in two mighty blows later in the symphony. But now coming on stage is Riccardo Chailly to conduct Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra in Mahler's Symphony No. 6.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
A moment of silence, and it seems all hope is extinguished at the end of Mahler's Sixth Symphony, performed tonight by the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra under its Kapellmeister, its music director since 2005, Ricardo Chailly. And tragic this work may have been nicknamed, but some have seen it as ultimately triumphing against fate. The hammer blows which we heard, some have said, represent blows that were to befall Mahler later in his own life. And that was the interpretation largely forwarded by his wife Alma. His resignation from the Vienna State Opera, the death of their daughter Maria, and of course, eventually Mahler's own premature end from complications of heart disease. Alma said he'd set his own life to music, but of course, all these events occurred well after the symphony, so was Mahler anticipating a tragic end, or was he in fact asserting that hope must win out? And here's Ricardo Chailly back. And just listen to the applause from this capacity proms audience. And Mahler said that that finale depicts the fall of a hero who is dealt three blows, the third of which fells him like a tree. And in fact, there were three hammer blows. We heard two of them tonight, as with the order of the middle movements. That was something on which Mahler was rather undecided. He certainly didn't want those hammer blows to sound loud and metallic. He said dully resonating was how they should sound. And indeed, the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra have a specially constructed hammer here tonight, and it is in fact the third that they had built. The previous two unfortunately broke, which is not too surprising, because believe me, the force the percussionist uses was quite something to see. In fact, the people sitting behind in the choir stalls who were immediately behind the hammer were absolutely in delight to see they were so close to this cataclysmic blow. And Ricardo Chailly asking his players to rise again to accept the applause. This pretty much the oldest European orchestra, founded in the 18th century and so inextricably associated, of course, with Felix Mendelssohn, as we heard in last night's prom. And, well, this is one of those occasions when the promos just don't want to let Ricardo Chailly go. He's back on stage now and asking individual members of the orchestra to stand. That's the principal flute, Katalin Stefula, principal oboe, Thomas Hipper, and cor anglais, Simon Sommerhalder, clarinet, Thomas Ziesch. And working his way now round the bassoons, contrabassoon now, a wonderful sonorous sound that this orchestra achieves. And that great cheer is for the whole of the woodwind section, who have so much to do in this symphony. And now the horns. Ricardo Chailly will of course leave nobody out. The trumpets, the trombones, the bass trombones, the tubas, the timpani now. Two timpanists tonight. In fact, one of the orchestra's timpanists is English, Tom Greenleaves. And the whole of that great percussion section too. We mustn't forget, of course, the two harpists who made such a wonderfully otherworldly sound. And finally, concertmaster Julius Bekesch. Well, Ricardo Chailly will be here for a while, making quite sure that every member of his orchestra receives the acclaim that they deserve. I'll leave you with the sound of that applause resounding around the hall and return you for the rest of this evening on Radio 3 to Ian Skelly back at Broadcasting House.
Penny, many thanks. Penny Gore at the Royal Albert Hall for us tonight. Well, if you came in towards the end of that performance and you'd like to hear the whole of it again, don't forget you can do so on the Radio 3 website, where it will be for the next 7 days, as will so much stunning music-making that's been made this weekend at the Proms. Last night's performance by the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra is there, and also that astonishing performance of Lutosławski's Third Symphony given by the Berlin Philharmonic under Sir Simon Rattle on Friday evening. That was the second of their two Proms this last week. All there at bbc.co.uk/radio3. Well, we'll be back at the Royal Albert Hall tomorrow night for some nostalgic memories as the BBC Proms celebrate the 70th anniversary this year of another BBC institution, Desert Island Discs. Kirsty Young will interview former castaways on stage, and the BBC Concert Orchestra will play some of the pieces of music that have been suggested as lifesavers down the ages. It's all here live on Radio 3 tomorrow night from 7:30. And earlier in the day, don't forget that we have a series of chamber music recitals as part of the Proms. They happen at Cadogan Hall, not too far from the Royal Albert Hall. They're all here on Radio 3, of course. Tomorrow, you can hear music by one of the composers the Proms is celebrating in style this year as we mark the 150th anniversary of the birth of Claude Debussy. Pierre-Laurent Aymard will be playing the whole of Book 2 of Debussy's Preludes, together with several other pieces, and that promises to be a typically thoughtful and thought-provoking performance. You can hear it live here on Radio 3 just after the 1 o'clock news. And another of the world's top pianists will be in town later this week, Murray Pariah. He's coming to the Proms with the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra on Thursday for the first of their two Proms, both of them given by the conductor Bernard Haitink. On Thursday, Pariah will be playing Beethoven, his fourth piano concerto. Well, we have a little time to go before our next programme tonight at 10:15, when we'll be whisking you off to Nepal in World Roots. So here's Murray Pariah now. Not playing Beethoven, he's playing Bach. Thank you. That was the toccata, followed by the gigue, the beginning and the end of the Partita No. 6 by Bach, BWV 830. And it was played by Murray Pariah, the pianist who will take centre stage later this week in a performance at the BBC Proms by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. They'll be conducted by Bernard Haitink, and he'll be playing Beethoven's 4th Piano Concerto. And you can hear that prom, the first of two given by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra this week, live here on BBC Radio 3, beginning at 7 o'clock this Thursday evening. Well, the time now is just a little after 10:15, and a little later than usual, it's time for World Roots on Radio 3. This week, Lucy Duran is in Nepal.
This is the central square of Bhaktapur. It's evening. There are a couple of very tall and beautiful temples and three groups of musicians playing in the shelters of the temples. I've been brought here by two guides. Shamshir Pradhan is the man that you have to know if you want to work in Bhaktapur. He's a research assistant, he's a lawyer, and he knows absolutely everyone. And my other guide here is Professor Richard Widdis, who's a specialist in the music of this country, of Nepal, and in particular of Bhaktapur. Shamshir, please tell me about this fantastic five-story temple that's behind you with five stories of pagodas.
This is the temple built late 17th century, and dedicated to Mahalakshmi, which is the goddess related to Tantrism. And this is the place, the central of the town. From here, the town divided into two, upper town and lower town.
Richard, the people who live in this particular town and in this region, who are they?
Most of them belong to the ethnic group known as the Newars, who are claimed to be the original inhabitants of the Kathmandu Valley, and who, over a period of 2,000 years, developed this wonderful urban civilization with magnificent architecture, and all the arts were cultivated, painting and sculpture and wood carving music, of course.
Tell me about the music that we're hearing now, that's the music that's coming from these temples.
This is music that's known as Dafa, which is singing hymns to the various gods and goddesses that are worshipped here in Bhaktapur. Especially here, because we're standing at the foot of the temple of Bhairav, who is the fierce incarnation of Shiva and is the patron deity of Bhaktapur. So these three groups were especially dedicated to singing his praises. But actually, all the groups sing songs to all the gods and goddesses.
Well, Richard, there are these three groups playing right now, and yet you're making me get up at the crack of dawn to go and hear another group in another part of town. Now, why is that?
Well, we're going to hear the Dafa group for the Chandeshwari temple, which is a much smaller temple in one of the local neighbourhoods of the town. But the Dafa group for that temple has a particularly vigorous way of singing, and they're particularly well organized. They have a music society which organizes the singing. They meticulously take the record of attendance of the singers, and if the singers don't attend, they have to pay a fine. So the whole thing is very enthusiastic, and this comes through in the music, I think, that you can hear the enthusiasm and the musical coordination.
And the dedication?
Absolutely.
So what I'm to expect tomorrow morning at the crack of dawn to wake me up is cymbals,
drums,
lots of singing.
Loud singing. They even have a trumpet player who joins in with the fast sections of each song. It makes quite a noise.
And all of that looking at the temple of the deity that they worship?
Yes, they sit on a platform that looks directly across to the temple itself, and there will be people coming and going to the temple to worship.
Even at 5:30 in the morning?
Even at 5:30 in the morning.
Rain or shine?
Rain or shine.
It's very early in the morning, and this group of about 25 men have been singing already for about 2 hours in front of a temple for one of the Hindu goddesses. And as you can hear, it's raining extremely heavily. It's been raining all night. We're in the monsoon season. And I have to say that I got very little sleep because the temple bells here in Bhaktapur were just ringing all night. Every time someone goes by a temple, they ring that bell. So it must be a very religious town, Bhaktapur, Richard.
It is. The name Bhaktapur itself means the city of devotees. Religion is just part of the whole way of life here.
The whole time we've been here listening to these musicians singing, there have been people coming up to the temple, women mainly, with offerings, flower petals. Men have been praying, touching their heads. It's just been constant the whole time.
Yes, that's how you should start the day, paying your respects to the local deity. Most of the people that we've seen will be local people from this particular neighbourhood, as are all the members of the singing group.
It's getting very busy now. There's traffic going down this very narrow street.
Yes.
Right opposite us, across the street, is the temple. But this shelter where we're standing here, explain the significance of this place where the musicians sit in a rectangle.
There are shelters like this all over Bhaktapur, and they're used for all sorts of purposes, and singing is one of them, especially where the shelter, as here, is facing a temple. Then that is the prime purpose of it, is for singers. But during the day, it could be used for any other purpose, for people to meet, to talk. Sometimes they can be used as a schoolroom, and so on. So it's not dedicated solely to music.
Shamshed, all of these gentlemen here, they're all farmers?
Most of them are all farmers, and still they are doing farming.
Some of them look very, very old. How old is the oldest member of this group?
95 years old, and he is still singing, and the rest of other members has to follow him.
Is it like a club then, this group of men?
Some sort
here?
Of music club, and it's a social structure. Not only the musical club, but when they have some social problems, they can work together, they can solve together. And among them, whenever they have some work to do, then they can share work.
They help each other
they help
with
each
farming.
Other. Yeah, with farming.
And what kinds of farming activity happens now in this season, in the monsoon?
Rice transplantation, afterwards weeding.
Weeding.
Weeding and harvest.
So they all go out and they pull out all the weeds from the rice together? Or
the weeding means they clear up unnecessary grasses in the paddy field.
Today is a special day. It's full moon. On this particular full moon day, the farmers worship the frogs that live in the fields, who are the guardians of the fields, and they take food for the frogs and leave it for them in the fields.
Lucky frogs.
When the summer is close, so they calculate their farming routine according to the frog's sound. And from today, after you feeding the frog, it means the summer temperature is coming down and the winter is coming close then.
To summarize, what we're hearing is a style of singing called dafa.
Yeah.
And it's for to celebrate the seasonal moment, which is the moment of weeding, the moment of feeding frogs, the transition from summer to winter, and the full moon.
Right, yes.
So, very good timing on our part to be here in Bhaktapur at this very moment.
It's our pleasure.
Just the right moment.
It's our pleasure.
that was the special style of singing that comes from this town, the royal town of Bhaktapur, to the east of Kathmandu. And that style of singing was called Dafa. And it seems to me that a lot of the music that happens in this town is in some way connected with temples and temple rituals. And we've come now to hear some drumming. Tell me about it, Richard.
Yes, this is a group called the Master Drummers of Nepal. They are local musicians who've formed themselves into a group who take their music all around the world. As far as I know, it's the only such group that actually play Newar music outside Nepal.
So all this music that we're hearing is really localized. It's just this place.
Yes, completely.
Normally you would hear it.
Yes. The music is based very much in small neighborhoods, very often around a temple. And so the kind of singing that we heard was performed by singers from that neighborhood around that temple.
For that specific goddess?
Yes, indeed.
One of the things that I wanted to understand was what was it exactly that the women were offering to the deities? Because they looked like little round discs of some kind on a plate. What was that? Shamsher.
That's a piece of radish, and it is a hook with the bamboo stick. And it is a symbol of mirror to honor the frog, that they can see themselves how beautiful they are, how they are happy. So that's a symbol of mirror.
So the frog is supposed to look in a round piece of radish,
yeah,
and see himself.
See himself, yeah.
And think how beautiful I look.
How beautiful they look, yeah.
In a radish mirror.
That this is the season of the frog's marriage as well.
Oh, they get married.
Yeah, they're married, so they have to be beautiful.
That's wonderful. Yes. And also I've been looking at the food as we've been walking along to where we are now. I've seen lots of different kinds of lentils and peas.
Yes.
What's that, Richard?
Yes. At this season, indeed on this very day, they cook a special kind of soup, which is made of 9 different kinds of beans and other pulses. So that is the special food.
Why
for this
9?
Festival. Well, 9 is a kind of sacred number, an auspicious number. So all good things come in 9. Like goddesses, for example, there are 9 special goddesses. And the music we're about to hear is from a repertoire called the 9 drums music, Norbaja, where you play a sequence of solos on 9 different kinds of drum.
Richard, I'm glad to see that they're tuning up, these master drummers.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because, curiously enough, the drummers of the Dafa musicians were certainly not in tune.
There's no concept that the drums have to be tuned to a specific pitch. But what happens is that once a year, the drum maker goes round all the groups and tunes their instruments for them and repairs them if necessary. Once a year, they get tuned. We're coming up to the retuning because it happens around about harvest time, because then the drum maker gets paid in the rice, the new rice, the harvested rice.
So once again, everything's connected with the agricultural year cycle.
Almost
and
everything.
The seasons.
Yes. Yes.
It's really organic music, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, yes.
Well, let's hear the master drummers of Nepal.
Thank you.
pretty spectacular and loud.
Very loud.
Everything seems very loud in this country.
As loud as possible.
That's the exciting and exhilarating sound of the master drummers of Nepal, recorded here in Bhaktapur, especially for World Roots, in this pavilion. And we're actually in the music department. This is part of the music department of Kathmandu University. A gorgeous location set in a tropical garden with the mountains around us. One of the master drummers is Raju, who's with me. So, Raju, tell me how you came to put together this group of master drummers.
Most of the group members as a friend also, and also they are working as in the department as a teaching. They also teach traditional drums and classical drum, tabla also they teach. We know each other for a long time, so as we just set a group as a playing these traditional drums.
And is there any other group like this in Nepal?
Traditionally there are several groups, but some old people are died and new people are not interested in playing these old instruments. Some groups are still there, but they don't play regularly.
Richard, tell me more about this music.
The dime music that we've just heard is very
the
often...
The dime is the name of the big oil drum, is that
drum,
it?
The drum, yes. This is processional music, which will be played walking down the street or walking around a temple, which might be part of a religious ritual, part of a festival.
And the oil drum doesn't seem like a very old drum.
Well, originally, of course, they were made of wood and rather smaller because they were made of a section of tree trunk hollowed out. But when oil drums became available, then, of course, they were used because they're so much bigger and enable the players to get such a big and deep sound.
There are lots of other drums in this group as well, different kinds of drum, but also different kinds of shawm. Tell me about those.
Well, the shawms are used for some of the pieces in the nine drums repertoire. They play a melody, a repeated melody, but actually they are accompanying the drum. The drum is the solo instrument. The shawms are there to accompany.
And this little drum?
The nekin is a small drum, traditionally played by the butcher caste. In the past, they had the duty to play in processions, at the head of the procession. For example, if the king were processing through the town. Nowadays, if a statue of the Buddha, for example, is being taken through the town, then the nekin will be played at the head of the procession.
I thought all this music was associated with Hinduism.
Buddhism is also a very important religion in Bhaktapur. There are Hindu and Buddhist festivals, and there are Hindu and Buddhist gods and goddesses.
Side by side?
Side by side. And many of the same musicians play in honour of both the Hindu and Buddhist deities.
Richard, today is a very special day in Bhaktapur, and there's a lot happening. We've come to a very narrow street with tall brick houses and lots of people waiting to begin the procession for this day, which is a day of the sacred cow. So tell me about it. What's this day?
Well, on this day, any family in Bhaktapur who has lost a relative during the last 12 months will celebrate that person's life. and they'll do so by carrying this tall structure, a bit like a church steeple, but made of bamboo and wrapped